again, everybody, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where great storytelling is par for the course. My name is Kelly Elbin, and along with my co-host Bob Bupka, we are delighted to welcome you to Masters Week 2023. Two-time Masters champion Ben Crenshaw is our guest. You'll hear from him later today. Bob, if it's Masters Week, at least in the world of golf, all is well with the world.
You're absolutely correct. There is no other week in golf like the Masters. I mean, they have it down to a science. You got to give the people at Augusta National a lot of credit. I mean, they're trying to stay as the state of the art for their golf course. Of course, much discussion this year about the 13th hole being lengthened about 50 yards. Powers to be felt that it was too easy to reach that green in two shots, sometimes the second shot being only a 7, 8, or 9 iron, and they didn't like that. So they put it back 50 yards. It's a little bit elevated, and it should bring some more choices to the players on whether they go for it, Kel, or whether they lay up.
You hear the term a lot, risk-reward in golf, Bob. You know it well, and our listeners who play on Saturday morning at their favorite golf course, when they have that second shot they might be facing on a par five, should they lay it up or could they go for it and try to knock it on? And you're right. Number 13 has become too, quote, easy for these players, and the powers that be indeed have gone back to what the original founders with Bob Jones wanted on that hole, is to create a risk-reward. Bob, the Masters is very much about drama, but you don't want to have driver 7-iron into a par 5. You want that guy to look at that second shot and wonder, okay, should I go for it? Should I lay it up? Think it through, and then if you go for it, you sure as heck better execute the shot.
Well said, Kelly, and of course, we're very fortunate. Later on in today's show, we're going to have Ben Crenshaw, two-time winner of the Masters, talk about that addition on that par 5 13th this year.
Exactly. Bob, I know you've covered your fair share of Masters tournaments. What's the Masters meant to you? And have you had a favorite moment or two through the years that have stood out for whatever particular reason?
Well, that might be the easiest question I've ever been asked. In 1986, I was the first person to interview Jack after he won his sixth green jacket. If that wasn't enough, the next day I got to play Augusta National, and I had about a six-foot putt on the 18th hole to shoot 78, and I drained it. So got to talk to Jack on Sunday, played Augusta on Monday. Good golly, if it gets better than that, you call me up right now.
Yeah, exactly. Were the pins in the same location?
Same spot, same location. That was the key. You know, played the same exact golf course that Jack did.
What was it like standing on the first tee that Monday morning? Were you nervous? Were you exhilarated? I know you were probably tired after a long week, but it had to have brought a lot of emotion with it.
Well, it did, because it was it's a fascinating story how I got to be on that first tee. Because back in those days, the way they awarded media to play, it was the first 25 people that signed up on Saturday morning. And I was told by a good friend of mine, Graham Agars, he's actually the voice of Australian golf. He's been around for a long, long time, also covers tennis. But he's a good buddy, and we were out to dinner earlier that week. And I said, I'm going to go sign up to play Augusta on Monday. He says, well, let me give you a tip. I said, what's that? He says, you have your car parked outside that gate at midnight. I said, midnight? I said, what time's the gates open? He says, 6 o'clock. But if you're there at midnight, you pretty much guarantee yourself in that top 25. Well, at midnight that night, they opened the gates, and it was gravel, and it wasn't paved. It looked like a stock car race going down to the media center, everybody running and jumping and getting out of their car. And I stop and I look, wow, I'm number 12. I'm in. And then about an hour later, people would come straggling up and they'd say, where's the line? And we'd say, you better get ready for next year. You're not getting in this top 25.
Well, and it was obviously a day that you will never forget. In a couple days, you mentioned with Jack winning in 86. You know, before we came on the air, Jenna Self, our executive producer, was talking about the way that Augusta National and the Masters have evolved over the years. She mentioned 1955 that they put all the holes had phone lines put in. So they were able to provide updated as quick a scoring as you could have from those times. Certainly the modern day is a lot faster. But Augusta National has continued, Bob, in a lot of ways. They were the first to have the scoreboards with red and green. They've really been at the forefront, the vanguard of changes in the way we see the game as a spectator on site and certainly on television.
You're right there. And the one recommendation I would make if any of our listeners have never been to the Masters, you know, it's not an easy thing, but I recommend if you get down there on Wednesday, practice day, you can, probably score a ticket and get in. That's all you want to do is walk the 18 holes. It doesn't have to be any action on the golf course. Just walking the 18 holes is enough. And the fascinating thing, Kelly, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Masters Week, there'll be about 70,000 spectators on the golf course. That's the number of tickets they've allocated for fans. When you show up Thursday, there's only 25,000 people. That's the number of tickets that have been on sale at that number for a long time, and I don't see it changing in the future. It's the only event I know where three times the amount of people show up for practice than they do for the actual competition.
That's pretty good. And it's their event. It'll always be their club's event, and they run it the way they want to. You know, I haven't had as many experiences as you have in terms of being on site, but I was very fortunate. My father, Max Elbin, was a past president of the PGA of America, and as such, he was on the rules committee for the Masters for about 25 years, and he was assigned to a particular hole each of the 4 days, and he would always ask, because he had his day job to go back to at Burning Tree Club outside of Washington the following Monday, he would always ask for an early hole on Sunday, and he would be, by the time the tournament was wrapping up at, say, 6 o'clock, he was landing or getting back home to the D.C. area from Atlanta. So, but my time, I was there for a few times with him and happened to be there in 87 when Larry Mize chipped in. And it was one of the most deafening roars I've ever heard, and certainly a crushing moment among several for Greg Norman at the Masters. But our guest today, Bob, Ben Crenshaw, there have been far more incredible moments, two-time 84 and 95 winning. You were there, I think, in 95, and just a special victory for lots of reasons with the passing of Harvey Pinnick, and just an incredibly kind and special guy in Ben Crenshaw.
Yeah, Harvey Pinnick was Ben's one and only instructor. He was much more than that. He was like a father to Ben Crenshaw, and you couldn't have a better father than Harvey Pinnick. And to even think, Kelly, that Wednesday of that Masters in 1995, Ben Crenshaw along with Tom Kite were pallbearers for Harvey Pinnick on Wednesday. Then they got on a plane and flew down to Augusta and had to play the first round of the Masters. And for Ben to come out on top was just an incredible story. I see him crouching to his knees, holding his hands over his face. His caddy, Carl Jackson, standing beside him. It's one of the most incredible sights you'll ever see on a golf course. And then in his interview with me, he proudly referenced the fact that he thought Harvey was certainly the 15th club in his bag that week and guided him to that magical victory.
Well, I think he was. And certainly that was a terrific moment in Masters history, and we look to have more of those over the next few days. So, Bob, Let's each give our pick here of who we like. You know, I know it's an easy pick, but I just feel like it's Rory McIlroy's time. He was second last year, made that very exciting bunker shot on 18 to finish ahead of Shane Lowry, fellow Irishman, to be solo second. He's right on the cusp of his career Grand Slam, and I know how much winning the Masters would mean to him.
You know, no one wants me to win this tournament more than me, right? I've always felt like I've had the physical ability to win this tournament, but it's being in the right headspace to let those physical abilities sort of shine through. So it's sort of just like I've got all the ingredients to make the pie. It's just, you know, putting all those ingredients in and setting the oven to the right temperature and sort of letting it all sort of come to fruition. But I know that I've got everything there. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Well, Kelly, I have Rory winning this week also. I just have that funny feeling. But I will give a little bit of a long shot to players that like a little more action for their money. Patrick Cantlay, to me, keeps sticking in my mind. He's got the temperament. He's got the talent. And he needs a good week. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, a bounce one way or another, whether it goes out of bounds or stays in bounds, whether it goes into a creek or doesn't, you know, all those factors don't seem like a lot during the week. But at the end, you'll find out that the winners traditionally have had more good breaks than bad breaks. Of course, all eyes are going to be focused on Tiger. He seems a little healthier. Can he pull another miracle? I can't go that far out on the limb, but I learned one thing. Don't ever underestimate the Tiger and his thoughts.
You know, I'm not able to compete and play as many tournaments or do the things I've been able to do over the years. But, yeah, I don't know how many more I have in me. So just to be able to appreciate the time that I have here and cherish the memories, it's really neat to be able to come here and play this golf course and see all the past champions. As I said earlier, this tournament has meant so much to me in my life. I've had so many great memories here, and looking forward to another great week.
Yeah, and Bob, I think what you said about don't underestimate him is exactly right. And much like with Rory, who needs to get off to a good start and not be sluggish on Thursday, if you see Tiger Woods go out and shoot 70 or 69 and get in the mix, who knows? No one in that field knows that golf course any better, has had any more success at the Masters than him. The only other guy that you must keep you know, a top of mind this week, and again for obvious reasons, is the guy who has the chance to do something that hasn't been done since Tiger, and that's repeat. And that Scottie Scheffler is, you talk about hitting on all cylinders. He's got a great mind for a place like the Masters. He believes, because he's won so much of late as the defending champion, I think he's going to be there come Sunday. I see no reason why, just based on current form. And the Masters is such a big part of his life now, hosting the Champions Dinner and being the defending champion.
Just because it's the Masters and it is what it is, and it's such a special tournament that I think we build it up so much in our heads. And I mean, as far as my preparation goes, I've kept things pretty similar to what they were last year, outside of getting here a few hours earlier on Sunday so I could play more golf. But when the tournament starts on Thursday, everybody starts at even par. Just because you're defending doesn't mean that I get to start at one under, and so I'll be approaching it just like I do a lot of other tournaments.
Yeah, and he's been an ideal champion, a wonderful ambassador for the game of golf. He reminds me in so many ways with his demeanor and his likability, you know, just not on the golf course, but off the golf course, to our special guest this week, two-time winner Ben Crenshaw. And actually, in our conversation with Mr. Crenshaw, he does mention the name Scottie Scheffler.
He sure does. And you're going to hear from Ben Crenshaw and some great stories from the two-time Masters champion right after this from our friends at Titleist.
To outperform is to be better. This begins with trusting a golf ball you know will outperform every other. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to deliver longer distance, lower long game spin, more consistent flight, and unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Kelly Elbin and Bob Bupke here. And Bob, it's Masters Week 2023. And what a thrill to be joined by two-time Masters champion, Ben Crenshaw. Ben, how are you?
I'm very good. Very good. Certainly looking forward to this week. I'm really enjoying watching these younger guys who keep coming up and keep displaying their skills. And there's so many of them who are so capable. Certainly Sam Burns played such a great week here in Austin a few weeks ago. And I think that he's getting better all the time, but there's so many guys who are capable and they're playing so well. And I watch these guys hit the ball these days, and it's just hard to fathom that it's seemingly over half the field can carry the ball 300 yards. I never thought
game,
we'd see that.
Different game from when you came out on tour in it.
Oh my gosh, by a long shot. I never thought we'd see it, but here it is. And I know that certainly on the topic is the question of the implements and the golf balls. Somebody asked me the other day about it, and I said, well, I don't know this to be true, but I think some of the younger guys may balk a little bit of it. And those players who've been around a bit and had a few years under the belts, well, something needs to happen. So I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I joined the camp in hoping that some courses around the country don't quite become so obsolete. That's what I lament, because some of the heralded golf courses that people have known about and have been so popular, you just hope they don't get out of date.
Yeah, Ben, it seems like that's kind of the crux of it, is those golf courses that may not be able to stand up to the elite players anymore because they simply don't have the room to literally be larger than what they are or more yardage than what they are.
Well, that's true. And it seems like only the scores stand up when you have conditions that are a little more difficult, meaning that if it's dry and the wind blows a little bit, sometimes that has an effect on scores, no question. Some places are very interesting. It doesn't matter how far you hit it, it's where you hit it. But I don't know. We're in space age technology.
Don't you be going off in any spaceships on us, Ben. Let's get back to a Masters question that I'm dying to ask you. You won it in 84, and then you win it again in 95. I would assume that the first time anybody wins the Masters, it may be their biggest thrill at Augusta National. I think possibly because of the affiliation with Harvey Pienick and you attending his funeral and then basically playing under the blessing of Harvey in 95, 95 may be even more special to you than 84. Am I anywhere near true?
Yes, you are, Bob. Absolutely. The first one was a great relief. To me, I had been close in some major championships before that, and I had a second place before that with Tom Kite. I think the year Seve Ballesteros won, we were close there, but I finally got it done in 84, and it was a huge relief. And I always thought that I was capable of it, but you never know until you come through. And then the second one was a great blessing to me. And it, the way it happened, as you say, we lost our dear friend that week, and it was just hard to believe that it happened that week. And Tom Kite and I had attended his funeral service that week, on Wednesday before the Thursday opening round, and flew back to Augusta. And, I had my old longtime caddy, Carl Jackson. We had a wonderful practice session. He suggested a couple of things, and, I played well. I was really proud of the way I played. A lot of people said, well, he's not emotionally there. He probably will not do well, that particular week, but, I don't know, something happened, to me, and I played like a kid again. I quit thinking about all technical thoughts. I had a couple of simple thoughts that week, and that was to make a tighter turn with my shoulders, stay down through the ball, and just the basics. I just played with confidence every day. I shot a nice opening round, which was key to me. Second round kept going, third round kept going, and some nice things happened. I got a couple of breaks here and there, and my confidence grew, and something allowed me to play, to have very simple thoughts. It was like, Bob, it was just as if, I'd say the Lord honoring me through Harvey, honoring Harvey through me. It was surreal, really, but I played with confidence and got through it. So it will always be my shining moment. There's no question about that.
And I love what you said, that Harvey was the 15th club in your bag that week. There was no doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't know when I thought about that after coming off the green and seeing some people, and that thought popped into my head, and I thought, well, it was an appropriate thing to say, because he really was. Truth be known, Bob, Harvey always stayed with us, and he always will. He was such a good man, and a great teacher, very kind man. And it was as if it was meant to be.
Well, I can assure you, having been blessed to know Harvey personally, when Harvey Pienick is giving Ben Crenshaw a lesson, Harvey's thinking he's giving a twin a lesson, because your standards were every bit as high as his, and that's what's make you so special. Hey Ben, one other thing here. Understanding that you're probably going to be biased in your answer, but how would you rate the four majors? Can you do that?
You know what? I've Julie, my wife, and I, we heard the question, or the way that Gary Player came out with his rankings. And look, I have no authority to rate the majors. I think it's dangerous. I would have dearly loved to have won any of the other ones. I was close in all of them. The majors are what they are. They're the highest tests. People will have their tastes. People will have their likes and dislikes. When you win a major, that's something very special. It sticks with you for the rest of your life. Each one has their own complexion. I'm a little biased, of course, about the Masters, but there's other ones. I came close to winning the British Open a few times, U.S. Open, lost a playoff at the PGA Championship. And close in other ones, but I'm thankful that I won the Masters twice. It appeals to me. I'm Southern. I'm from Texas. And unbelievable, Bob, Texans have done so well in the Masters. It's unbelievable. We've got, I think there are 10 Masters champions from Texas. I don't know why that is. They Texans have always done well there. And I think when you have somebody like Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan and Jackie Burke, it sort of spurs young Texans' dreams of tournament golf. And yes, you know, Texas professional golfers would love to win the Masters. And it's sort of a fraternity, I suppose. But no, I think it's a little dangerous to rate them all, because you've got proponents on all sides. The majors are what they are.
And they're great. And Kelly, I know you have something.
Yeah, two-time Masters champion Ben Crenshaw joining us. Ben, one of the things that Gary Player noted was his feelings about the four majors is that the Masters is the youngest of the four, which it is. And
it
yet,
is.
For so many players, Ben, it has become the aspirational one almost above all the others. The Masters has climbed so high, so fast in terms of how it's viewed by the players and certainly by the public. Why is that? Is a big part of that simply because it's played at the same great golf course every year?
Well, that's certainly one of the factors. There's no question about that. It is the youngest, but I really do think that it has an appeal with a worldwide audience. It's a familiarity mm-hmm. about the course. You know, everybody, it's so scrutinized now. Everybody knows everything about it. But it's the nature of how it's played, and it's that golf course, and it's a place where yes, you can take chances, and you see great comebacks, and you see excitement. It's the actual ground, and the way that people can play it. You take tremendous chances sometimes. Sometimes you spectacularly fail or go ahead. And you know, one thing about Augusta is that you can't play it safely and expect to win. You've got to take chances. But I think it's the atmosphere. And also it's the acoustics. When a player plays at Augusta, the actual noise reverberates around the golf course. You have these valleys, and the sound of the galleries really you almost bet in knowing how the crowd reacts. You know who that is and how they stand. It's an amazing bit of acoustic excitement with it. So that has something to do with it as well.
And over the years, Ben, the powers that be there have made changes to the golf course. And I know you've been asked this, and it begs to ask you again in terms of the change to number 13, the great par 5, been lengthened now by 35 yards. I think you played there recently. Did you have a sense of how different those 35 yards make the setup of that hole now?
I'll tell you what, it was fascinating. I went with two groups a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I've got to crawl back here and look at this tee box. And let me tell you something. It's a hike back up that hill. It's a higher tee. It goes right with the land that goes to Augusta Country Club. But it's a very, very visible tee box in that the tee is so high now. It's a hike back there. But to me, it says something to me how far the game has gone and what the club is willing to do to accommodate modern play. It's still, even for the long players, there's a great temptation of trying to hit a draw around that corner, which is really a gambling shot if you want to get there in two. And it retains the nature of how the hole was built so naturally, and that creek on the left comes into play with so much slope right to left. But you've got to really crack two of them to get there. They can do it, but I think the club did the right thing. It's when you see when the people watch it on television, they'll have a camera back there and they'll see what the players will see. It's back there. I must say that may be one of the only times I'll ever go back there.
Well said, Ben. We're deeply honored to have the opportunity to speak with you, a two-time Masters champion. And let me assure every one of our listeners that as fine a golfer as Ben Crenshaw has been throughout his life, he is even a far better person off the golf course. And before we wrap up, Ben, I know some friends of yours, Scotty Sayers, your longtime manager, Ed Clements, and so many others in the Austin area, are working to try and preserve a muni down there. Can you bring us up to date on your progress, and do you see it happening in the future?
Well, we certainly hope so. We're trying to apply steady pressure. You know, it's a very interesting situation. Bob, as you know, a lot of municipal golf courses around the country are trying to save themselves from development one way or another. We have so many friends at the University of Texas, and the University of Texas owns the land. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. The golf course has been there since 1924. And really, the bottom line or the problem is where it sits, Bob, because it's in a beautiful spot right next to Lake Austin in the center of town. Very valuable piece of property. But on the other hand, the golf course has meant so much to so many people, young and old, that have played that golf course and loved it. And we hope it stays on because it's meant a lot to a lot of people's lives. I think it's a great place to recreate. And, you know, Bob, I don't think there's any other game like golf that promotes friendship and getting along with people and teaching you things every day. It's great for the youth to get into, and it means a lot for older golfers to keep going over there. So we carry the same plight of places that are trying to save themselves. We hope to work things out. But the bottom line is the University of Texas's land.
Hey, Ben, final question for me before Bob sends you off. And that is, can you peer into your crystal ball for us and give us maybe your pick or a couple guys who you feel very strongly have a good chance to be wearing that green jacket at the end of this week?
Well, I have been so proud of Scottie Scheffler. My goodness, he has played some unbelievable golf in the past few years. He might well defend his title. He's such a calm, patient person. He seems to have such a good head on his shoulders, and he's got his assets. You know, he's big and tall. He's got a great posture. He's an unbelievable short game, great little shots, and a beautiful putter. But he is seemingly doing the right things, and he's not straying from anything he just doesn't seem like he has many weaknesses at all. And I tell you, one of my good friends is Randy Smith, his teacher, who keeps him on an even keel. He's a really good friend of mine, and he's doing some good work. He's liable to repeat. Sam Burns is playing awfully well, as well as Xander Schauffele. He is such a sound player, very, very steady. He'll be there. I guarantee you he'll be there contending. So many guys. Cameron Smith, all these people are just – you watch him play and you say, well, God, how can that guy not help but win. They're just incredible. And they, once again, they hit the ball so far, but they know what to do with it after they drive it. One thing is for sure, though, at Augusta, you have to have a sharp short game and a sharp putter. You've got to knock the ball in the hole when you can. And I think the main thing is to two putt from very, very difficult circumstances. That's always keeping you instead. If you get a 40 footer out there and it breaks 4 feet, and if you two putt, it gives you confidence to go into the next hole. And I got to say, one of the great approach putters that ever lived was Jack Nicklaus. He almost never three putted that much. He just would get it up there, he'd tap it in, get it on to the next hole. But you got to play with imagination and touch and a bit of bravery too.
Well, Ben Crenshaw, once again, on behalf of Kelly Elbin and yours truly, I've been proud to be a friend of yours for probably too long to even count.
Yeah, we've been friends a long time, Bob.
We sure have. One of the fondest memories is when you were building that golf course for Pete Bistrian, and we were out in that open field, and I'm standing there with you, and Kelly Ben says to me, "Look at that down there, boy. That is going to be some par five." And he says, "See over there? That's going to be a great par three." I said, "Ben, I'm looking at an empty field." But that's the kind of vision Ben has. That's the kind of person that he is. Ben Crenshaw, we cannot thank you enough. Enjoy your time at the Masters, and as I know you will, and we'll see you lots on television for sure. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Kelly. I always remember Kelly, your dad, with that smiling face of his. What a nice man.
You're most kind. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you all very much.
We all aspire to outperform the player we were yesterday. The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X can help reward your best swings like never before. Both models are longer and more consistent, with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, I know you feel the same. We can't thank Ben enough for his time, for his input. There's rarely a short answer when you ask Ben Crenshaw a question, and that always makes for a great interview and a great bit of information for our listeners.
Yeah, and the thing I've noticed about Ben over the years, and I've been a friend now for quite a number of years, he speaks from the heart. He holds nothing back. He is as perfect a gentleman as we've probably ever had playing the game, right up there with Byron Nelson and some of the other all-time greats. I mean, Ben is the real deal. And I'm glad that we had an opportunity to have him with us, Kelly, on Musings on Golf.
He is the real deal. The Masters Tournament is certainly the real deal. Folks, enjoy the Masters. Bob, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll have a whole lot to discuss post-Masters. But enjoy the week, and happy Easter to all as well. For Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off, Musings on Golf.